99.7% is the percentage of the vote that Ichiro Suzuki just received to be the first Japanese member of the Baseball Hall of Fame. I just want to have a chat with whoever didn't vote for Ichiro Suzuki to the Baseball Hall of Fame. There's no good reason to not vote for him. There's not like a, oh, he's going to get in, I'm going to vote for someone else. That's dumb. Because then you'll forever be burdened with the knowledge that you are the one that prevented him from having a unanimous vote. I hope you have a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. I hope that you drive to the grocery store and realize your gas tank is on empty and you forgot to fill it up yesterday, so you have to add some time into your day to do that, and it inconveniences you. I hope when you are at self-checkout at the grocery store that you have a bunch of items that can't scan, and the little light has to blink above you, and you have to get someone over to scan their card. I hope that just keeps happening. I hope when you're walking out of the grocery store, you have a full load in on your arms. You have like four bags, so you can't bend down to tie your untied shoes that you didn't know were untied. Your laces are getting all dirty. You just bought those shoes. That sucks. Oh, you stepped in a puddle on accident too. That's brutal. Oh, one of your shopping bags just ripped. I hope that happens to you. I hope when you're bending over to pick up your groceries, frantically trying, I hope you rip your pants while bending over to do so. I hope you go home tonight. I hope your ice cube trays are not full. You pull them out and you're like, ah, oh, who didn't fill these? And you remember it was you. It was you that didn't fill the ice cube trays. And then when you're filling up the ice cube trays, you spill some water on the ground and don't realize it. And you're a no shoes household. And then you step in the water with your socks on. Now your socks all wet. What do? Do you put on a new sock? Do you put on two? Put on a new pair? You take the whole pair off, put in the laundry? What do you do? I hope you open up your computer and all your passwords are just gone. Your password key just doesn't work. All your saved passwords you have to go to every single account you have a password on, and you have to say forgot password ? And have to go through all of that. Every one of your passwords. I hope you settle down tonight to watch a movie on the couch and you get nice and comfy. You get wrapped up in a blanket. The lights are low. You got a snack, maybe a drink. And I hope you lay down. You're so comfortable. And then you realize the remote is out of reach. And you have to get up from that comfort and go get the remote. I hope all that stuff happens to you, voter, wherever you are. Maybe I'm a little too fired up about this. But welcome back to the Chaos Ball Podcast, everyone. This is episode 99.7%. No, this is episode 100. I've done 100 of these, which is kind of insane. Kind of an insane thing for me to do when you think about it. But thanks for listening, if you've listened to all of those. I don't know if there's anyone in the world who's listened to all of these besides myself. And I don't even listen to the full thing usually when I edit these. But thank you for tuning in. This episode, that was a cold open because the Hall of Fame voting was just released. I'm recording this. Ichiro wasn't unanimous. I'm a little peeved, but like, whatever. I'm not going to work myself up about it. This podcast, what are we chatting about? Sasaki has signed since I podded last. Talk about what that means. Are the Dodgers ruining baseball? No, they're not, but I'll talk about it. And then a decent chunk of this episode is going to be dedicated to talking about the Hall of Fame, talking about Ichiro specifically, and then talking about Felix Hernandez, who is staying on the ballot after year one, which is phenomenal news. I have a lot of Felix Hernandez stats to throw at you. I have a lot I've just compiled. I almost did the Hall of Fame episode last week before the results, but I knew Ichiro was going to get in. I knew Felix wasn't going to get in. I wasn't going to get on here and like make a case for Felix before the voting came out because no one who's voting for the Hall of Fame is listening to me. So it's not like I'm going to be doing someone a favor and flipping their vote. But now that Felix is healthily staying on the ballot, the real fight begins. And I had a real fun time looking up little stat nuggets for him. So that's all I'll say about that. But But let's get into it. Let's just chat about the Sasaki and the Dodgers first, just to get that out of the way. So you're telling me I'm supposed to be mad at the team who is actively trying to put the best collection of 26 players on the baseball diamond and maximize all the money they made last year, put a lot of it into the team this year. They've created themselves and established themselves as a destination, maybe the best destination for prospective players. Looking back, Roki Sasaki ending up at the Dodgers makes the most sense. It really does. There was like talk of him wanting to potentially sign with a smaller market team with good pitching development, sure, but come on. Who wouldn't want to go play for the Dodgers? I would sign with the Dodgers if I was being courted by MLB teams. I would love to play for the Dodgers. So him signing there, not shocking. I think it was $6.5 million signing bonus. Other teams could have given him that. I think their max after they made trades was like 8.5 or something like that. So every team again could have signed him. There's been a lot of Dodgers are ruining baseball chats and like, oh, the lockout's going to suck, which lockout totally is not like a me having an opinion or critique. I think people talking about the lockout are legitimately making a point that there could definitely be a worse lockout than we even saw a couple of years ago in a few seasons. So that's not amazing, but there's been a lot of talk about Dodgers ruining baseball, yada, yada, yada. It's stupid. It's very dumb to say that. First of all, this is great for the game of baseball. Having a single team that everyone is united against is good for the game. It was the Yankees for the longest time. Maybe recently, I feel like it was the Yankees until like this decade, probably. I mean, the 90s was, or at least the latter half of the 90s was the Yankees. They were still probably the best team in ball in the 2000s, even though they only won, I guess technically two World Series championships in the 21st century. But they were still around. They were still really good. They were still outspending everyone. And then I feel like it shifted. And like the 2010s, the Dodgers then that decade established themselves not quite as hateable, but as maybe the best run team in baseball and the best team in baseball potentially. Because while they didn't stack World Series titles in that decade, they won their division every single year. They were consistently good. They were consistently in the playoffs. But I feel like the villain in baseball has been the Astros the past, I'll say 7-8 years since they won their first one in the banging scheme. Then they won another one and they were in the LCS 7 straight seasons. And they won what, 3 championships? No. Yes. 3. Someone please correct me. My brain is all scrambled today. But I feel like they were the villain because they were winning all the time and because they cheated. So that's a good villain. Now it's 100% the Dodgers. They've won their second World Series title in 5 years, 4 years. Some people don't count 2020, which is dumb. It counts. And now I think they're officially the villain, and I think that's phenomenal for baseball. And also, is everyone forgetting the sport that baseball is? Are we all forgetting that you literally can't buy a championship in baseball? Like, are we forgetting that the best team rarely wins the World Series in this sport? Yes, this is probably, especially for me, greatest team I've ever seen put together. I think it definitely has a case for the greatest team in the 21st century, which is great under the same category of greatest team that I've ever seen put together. But again, it's baseball, man. Like, that team doesn't win all the time. Like, maybe they run off another 3 World Series in a row or something and I get proven wrong, but I just don't see that happening. Like, are we all forgetting what can happen in the playoffs? Like, the Padres almost beat the Dodgers last season. They were very close. So, I don't want to hear the Dodgers are ruining baseball. And if baseball is being ruined, it's the 29 other teams that are not trying as hard. Like, yeah, the Dodgers definitely have more appeal than most teams. Like, they have like you can talk market size, but they also, I think, just being a wealthy person in Los Angeles is probably better than better living for most people than being a wealthy person in a lot of other cities in the country. Seems to be quite fun to be wealthy and live in LA. And they have like the history, you know, they're one of baseball's most storied franchises, but they're also just so well run. And the ownership is very clear in the idea that this is an investment, but I say that as like a good thing. I'm not stumping for billionaires here, but just comparing their ownership group to every other ownership group besides Steve Cohen, they are taking the money. Again, they're taking the money they made last year and they've put it all on the team because they see if they keep just putting money in the team and getting good players and good teams, they're going to keep printing money. And every team could do this from the smallest markets to the biggest markets. If the Pirates went out and spent $250 million on a bunch of players this offseason, imagine how much money they would make next year compared to last season with Skeens there and all their other players. And then if they sign some big name free agents, could you imagine? Like, that is generally how investments work. You put more money into the product and you generally make more money, especially in sports. So I think the Dodgers are just taking that to another level. And they've now made themselves as a premier destination. Like Hyesung Kim signed there. Now Roki has signed there. Tanner Scott just signed there. Kirby Yates just signed there. And it was reported that Tanner Scott had more years and more money from the Red Sox, but chose to sign with the Dodgers. And why wouldn't he? You can go play on one of the best teams in ball, probably the best team in baseball on paper by far. Why wouldn't you go play there? That's what can happen when you put a good product on the table. So they're not ruining baseball. It's the 28, again, minus Steve Cohen, the 28 other owners and ownership groups that are happy to sit and rest on their laurels and make a decent amount of money year over year without actually having to really, really invest in the product heavily, as much as the Dodgers do at least. So that's that with the Dodgers ruining baseball. Get out of here. If you want to use this as a basis for baseball needs a salary cap, I will laugh you out of the room. Baseball doesn't need a salary anything. Cap or floor, they need none of it. MLB, I think, however, I do think there is a problem with our great sport. The fact that the Dodgers and the Mets are basically the only two teams really trying. Like, other teams are definitely trying, but owners are not trying as hard as those two. And they should be. And they're not. That's the problem with baseball. A lot of these revenue-sharing, receiving teams don't put that money back into the team as they should. That's should be the point of revenue sharing. So baseball, yes, I agree. Baseball has a problem right now with money. But it's not the Dodgers' problem. The Dodgers are merely, like, just exposing everyone else. Because it'd be one thing if you said they bought this whole team, and they've bought a lot of the team, but they've gotten a lot of their core currently from drafting and signing amateur players and developing them and then trading them away and trading them to teams who are suckers. Mookie Betts is a Dodger. The Red Sox wanted to trade him because they didn't want the Babe Ruth trade to be the only awful trade in their history. They wanted another one. The Dodgers sprang on that opportunity and acquired Mookie Betts. They did the same thing with Freddie Freeman. They did the same things with Trey Turner and Max Scherzer. They make good trades when other teams are wanting to give away elite players. The Dodgers are like, oh yeah, we have a bunch of prospects to give you. And then they trade for them and then they extend them because they're a good organization. And then, yeah, they've signed Otani and Yamamoto and all these guys this past offseason to a bunch of big money deals because they can, because they keep making money, because they keep improving the team. It is a snowball. But if you think the Dodgers are going to be around forever this good, like, again, I ask, what sport have you been watching? The highest payroll team, the best team, rarely wins in this sport. Dodgers might win 120 games in the regular season and lose in the NLCS to the I don't know, Phillies or something. Like, it could very much happen. It's baseball, man. That's my two cents on the whole Dodgers ruining baseball thing. Sasaki, back to Sasaki specifically. The Mariners should be so embarrassed. The Mariners used to be the destination for Japanese players, and now they can't even get a meeting with him. They didn't get a meeting with Roki Sasaki. It's not that they didn't sign him. They didn't get a freaking meeting with him. And that is a sign that, yes, ownership is really awful. We already knew that. But this Roki Sasaki situation is not about ownership. Because they didn't have to give him the Yamamoto contract for him to come over here. He was going $6.5 million. Let's just hypothetically say it costs that. It's the international bonus pool money. This is set aside to spend already. They didn't need ownership's approval to sign Roki Sasaki to a big money deal. So this screams that there is absolutely organizational dysfunction and rot in the Mariners that is not exclusive to ownership. Ownership doesn't help it, and I think ownership is still the main issue here. But the fact that they couldn't get a meeting with Roki Sasaki tells me everything I need to know, that there is just problems in this organization. They could have touted, hey, we're going to run a six-man rotation so we don't overwork you in the first year or two of your deal. We can give you just as much money as every other team because we can. That's how this works. We have top-class pitching development. Probably like top, at least top five. I'd wager top three. Just as good as the Dodgers. I think they might have a better pitching apparatus than the Dodgers because look at how good and healthy their young arms have been. All the Dodgers pitchers are hurt. The Mariners might be the leading organization in young pitcher health in the development aspect. So the fact that they weren't a finalist, they didn't get a meeting, is infuriating. It is embarrassing. It is a failure through and through. This wasn't like the Ohtani sweepstakes. They were in on Ohtani. I think they had a meeting. They were one of the final teams. And then all of a sudden it was like, no, he just had a gut feeling. He was signing with the Angels. Not necessarily all on the Mariners there. Painful, yeah, very painful. But this one, the fact that they didn't get a meeting, I'm pretty damn confident they could have gotten a meeting if they made this a top priority. Why wouldn't they have? Like, I am at a loss for words that they couldn't even get him to, like, come to Seattle. Or they didn't go to LA where he was having all these meetings. I just can't believe it. I can believe he signed with the Dodgers, though, again. What a choice. I would do the same thing, so Roki Sasaki. All right, let's touch on last thing on Sasaki that I wrote down here before I talk about Donovan Solano for 2 minutes. If Rob Manfred was a real commissioner, he would have David Stern'd this Sasaki signing. Second he got wind he was going to sign with the Dodgers, he would have vetoed it a la the Chris Paul to the Lakers trade. He would have said, nope, sorry, he gets to go to the Padres or the Blue Jays. So there's that. The Mariners signed Donovan Solano, and the amount of like good tweets I saw about this was sickening. Absolutely disgusting. The amount of people on the internet who were, I don't want to say praising this signing, but were like, yeah, this is a great signing. I cannot believe what this organization has done to us as a fan base. It's demoralizing. I think, in a vacuum, yes, signing Donovan Solano to like $3 million is a good signing. He is a veteran. He's proven that he can be a pretty good hitter. He's been great the past couple of years in a limited role. Yeah, like in a vacuum, sure. He's a helpful piece on a team that wants to contend. This is the only free agent signing they've made. Position player wise, I guess. They've signed a couple pitchers. Maybe I was just angry online that day, but I simply could not believe the amount of tweets that I saw. Like, oh, this is going to improve the team a lot. It was a great signing. I can't believe what Jerry DePoto and John Stanton and the rest of the ownership group have done to us. They give us a crumb and we eat it like it's a succulent Chinese meal. Donovan Solano, again, is fine. Like, I think he's fine. My main concern is he's 37, and this screams to me like the Mariners needed to sign him 2 years ago, because if he was on the Mariners and put up the exact same statistics as he has the past, let's say they signed him in after 2022, after they made the playoffs for first time in 20 years. If he gave them the exact same stats as he gave the Twins and the Padres in 2023 and 2024, that would have been a super helpful player for the Mariners. He can mash lefties. He hasn't hit the ball particularly hard, but he's nicknamed Donnie Barrels for a reason. His barrel rate also isn't elite, but he finds the sweet spot on the barrel and finds the sweet spot, has a decent launch angle, and has managed to just be a pretty damn productive hitter since 2019, like a late bloomer. I worry that now going into age 37, too many people, I think, were saying, like, look at how good he was in, like, 700 plate appearances, a lot against left-handed pitching the past two seasons. And I'm worried that, like, maybe that was it. That production is what the Mariners needed in 2023 and 2024. But we're talking about 2025. My confidence level is not high that he can continue with a 760 OPS on the Mariners at age 37. I hope he proves me wrong. I really do. Well, there's one good thing, I guess, about this signing is maybe they don't. God, I don't know. Maybe they don't sign a first baseman now. They should just sign Pete Alonso. They should give Pete Alonso $90 million for three seasons. Like, I don't know why they haven't done it already. That's like roughly what he's looking for. Infuriating. But again, a veteran presence guy who seems to be a pretty good hitter. I think this is a good signing. Again, in a vacuum, I'm just dejected after watching how this team has operated this offseason. So that's Donovan Solano. I'm not excited about it. Again, my main concern, again, 37 years old. One of those, it was kind of like not one-to-one with the AJ Pollock signing. But when AJ Pollock signed and people on the internet were like, look at his numbers against left-handed pitching the past couple years. I'm like, well, now he's older, 1 year older. Going to the Mariners historically doesn't work for most hitters. And no matter how good AJ Pollock was against lefties, the sample size was so small. And lo and behold, AJ Pollock was awful for the Mariners. And I sat back and said, I'm not surprised by this at all. So if Donovan Solano is a 90 OPS plus hitter and 200 plate appearances for the 2025 Mariners, you can bookmark that, because I think that might be what he does. Now, I hope that's not true, but hard to get it up for like a potential veteran 37-year-old platoon who might have like a 110 OPS plus and 250 plate appearances, you know, when this team needs a Pete Alonso. So that's where I'm at with the Donovan Solano signing. But now it's Hall of Fame discussion time. The results are in. The results are in. CC Sabathia, Billy Wagner, and Ichiro Suzuki are in the Hall of Fame. As I said before, Ichiro Suzuki, 99.7% of the vote, almost unanimous. CC got 86.8%, and Billy Wagner got 82.5%. Carlos Beltran got 70.3 on his third year, so he's on a good track. I think the involvement in the banging scheme is kind of wearing off here. I feel like he's going to get in the next year or two, it seems like. Andrew Jones is up to 66.2% in his eighth year. I feel like it's going to be close. I think he's a Hall of Famer. And then there's a pretty steep fall off. All these guys after that are almost 40%. Chase Utley, A-Rod, 37%, Manny Ramirez, 34%, Andy Pettit, 28%. And then Felix Hernandez, his first year on the ballot, gets 81 votes, 20.6%. So he stays on here. And that is clearing the 5% to stay on, well, clearing it, which is amazing. It was way more than I expected him to get. But after all the public ballots were out, it was pretty clear he was going to stay on the ballot, which is awesome. I think going into his Hall of Fame candidacy, I and most people were just hoping he'd get the 5% in the first year to stay on the ballot. So really happy about that. But I'll talk about Ichiro first. I have less to say about him, to be honest with you, than I have about Felix. I'm not going to throw any Ichiro hard stats at you here. But Ichiro Suzuki and Felix Hernandez, just both of them, probably my two favorite baseball players of all time. Ichiro is my first ever baseball memory. Ichiro in a Mariners uniform is the first thing I remember about baseball. It's my first conscious memory of baseball is Ichiro. I remember loving him when I was a kid. I was a right-handed hitter in Little League, but I, like a lot of other kids growing up in King County, imitated his batting stance. Even in like T-ball, I remember doing that. Talk about a man with aura. Talk about an icon. And I think I'm a big Hall guy too. I'm a big, like, I would vote for 10 people every year. But I'm also like, when you say a guy's name, I think your immediate reaction is usually the one that I would go with. And Ichiro, to most people, you say his name, that's a Hall of Famer. You don't even have to say his full name. That's part of his iconic status in baseball, is you just say Ichiro, everyone knows who you're talking about, and he's in the Hall of Fame now. I mean, I think the only stat you need for him is he entered MLB at age 27 and still got over 3,000 hits in MLB. That's it. That's a Hall of Famer. Like, that's insane. He comes over as the first position player from Japan, wins Rookie of the Year, wins MVP, hits over 350. He goes on to have an insanely consistent career and plays a very long time in professional baseball as a whole. He is just one of the most one-of-one players the sport has ever seen. On the field, I mean, everyone knows it's Ichiro. Like, Rocket, Gold Glove, 10 Gold Gloves, 10 All-Stars. He set the MLB hits record for the season in 04. He was constantly stealing bases. He was legging out infield singles, his thing. He'd been on a chopper to the left side of the infield. He was at first base. Just an iconic player. And to go along with it, one of the best interviews of all time, I'd say. Some of the best quotes of any professional athlete ever. And it was because he was fairly unassuming and he also wasn't speaking the language. So when he was getting quotes, they did numbers. I mean, he has some of the funniest comedic timing of any athlete of all time. He's just amazing. And the best part of his game, and this has been talked about a lot, he has the famous home run off Mariano Rivera, the famous walk-off, which is an insanely cool moment in baseball history. But so many guys have talked about watching him take BP, and it's like, man, this guy could hit more home runs. And Ichiro has said this. He's like, I don't hit home runs, you know. I'm a singles guy. I play a sexy brand of baseball, you know. And there's interviews with countless players who played with him, who played against him, who said, yeah, if that guy really wanted to focus on hitting dingers, he probably could have. But he didn't. Instead, he was just hitting 350 and having a super well-run game in general. Again, I don't have a whole lot else to throw at you about Ichiro. I could just speak about what he means to me personally. He means a lot. I had a huge poster of him in my room when I was a kid. Again, I imitated his batting stance like many other kids. The fact that he still is with the Mariners organization and can clearly probably still play ball at a decent level is astounding. His level of consistency for a decade straight there was crazy. Just crazy. And he means a lot to the Mariners franchise. First Japanese position player to come over here. the first Japanese position player in the Hall of Fame, probably the most iconic Japanese player of all time, really. And he paved the way for many others. I mean, he paved, in a sense, he paved the way for Shohei Ohtani to come over here. So, salute to Ichiro. Just seems like a lovely individual as well. Really addicted to the game of baseball. And I'm so happy he's in the Hall of Fame. I can't wait for his Hall of Fame speech. I cried at his Mariners Hall of Fame speech. I will probably cry again at his Hall of Fame speech for Cooperstown. We're getting to the point now on these ballots where I'm remembering these guys playing baseball. For a little while there, I'm like, Ichiro is my first baseball memory. I remember him. I didn't watch 01. I was 1 year old. But I watched the latter half of his career on the Mariners. And again, his first baseball memory was probably like, it was probably the 04 season, probably somewhere around there. It's not like I fully remember what season it was. But the image in my mind of Ichiro in a Mariners uniform is one of my earliest memories in general. And the fact that I'm now seeing, like, CC Sabathia, I remember watching him, like, Carlos Beltran, Chase Utley, I remember these guys, which makes Hall of Fame mean a little bit more to me now. Like, Billy Wagner, I have no recollection of Billy Wagner, or even Andrew Jones. I'm too young. But I do think they deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, just looking at their statistics and what guys say about them and watching highlights. So the fact that I remember players now going in the Hall of Fame is great. Salute to Ichiro. There will be a lot of good things written about him this week. So I don't want to take too much of this podcast talking about him. I implore you to go read what everyone is going to write about him in the next week or so, because he's just a sensational player. And now to move on to my favorite player of all time. Maybe my favorite athlete of all time. It's him or Eden Hazard. But Felix Hernandez, just for a lot of people, I talked about when you say a guy's name and your knee-jerk reaction is often the correct one for you. For a lot of people, when you say Felix Hernandez, you don't think Hall of Fame. I think for a lot of people, he fits the MO of Hall of Very Good, which is fair. I understand it. Him and Andrew Jones are a little similar in, I think, what a lot of people say to denigrate their Hall of Fame case, in that they both came up when they were, I want to say Andrew Jones was 19 when he came up, but really young. Really, really young. Came up, made an immediate impact on the team. And then for a decade straight, they were great. They were a great, great player. And then once they hit 30, basically it fell off quickly and dramatically. That happened for Andrew Jones. That's the biggest case of why he's not elected to the Hall of Fame in his eighth year and only has two more years left. Andrew Jones is one of the greatest defensive center fielders of all time and wasn't a slouch at the plate and was on those great Braves teams in the 90s. Felix, similar case, where it's the longevity that people talk about to say, I'm not going to vote for him, which I understand if you think that way. I understand if you think a Hall of Famer should have an amazing peak, but also be able to gracefully age. And Felix did not. But I think because his peak was so damn good, that is the argument for why you should vote for him, and that's the argument why he didn't age gracefully. The amount of innings he threw before he turned 30 is sickening when you think about how little innings pitchers throw now. It's crazy how many innings he threw over the course of his career. Like, they worked him like you do not work a pitcher like this anymore. Never would a team do this now. And this is only like 10 years ago, 10 to 15 years ago. Crazy. He came up when he was 19. He was immediately good. And then he didn't look back until about age 30, 31. And then again, it fell off dramatically. And it's sad that he's on the ballot in 2024. It's sad that this is his first year on the ballot, because he should be like a unanimous Hall of Famer in my mind, hitting the ballot with Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer and Clayton Kershaw and those guys of his era, because those are guys of his era, which is transitioning to another conversation before I get into his stats that I've pulled, is he marks the end of an era for starting pitchers. I think CeCe as well does, but he's marking the end of an era before that era technically ends with the Hall of Fame. And what I mean by that is yeah, Verlander, Scherzer, Kershaw, Greinke too, even. I would even entertain throwing like a Johnny Cueto in there. You don't really have pitchers like this anymore who give you insane production and are an absolute workhorse. They throw a lot of innings. You just don't see it in baseball anymore. And I think when all those guys go into the Hall of Fame, the conversation will shift completely. Like, how are we going to judge pitchers who have come up in the last 7 years? We're going to have to judge them on a completely different curve. They're not going to have the workload as pitchers of different eras before. And because Felix's career fell off so quickly, he's a good litmus test for how that conversation is going to change over the next 9 years. He got 20% in year one. That's great. The real fight starts now. And I think the fact that he got 20% shows that I think the conversation's already kind of shifted. I think people are looking at it now like, oh, this wasn't too long ago. He was averaging for like his peak, like 235 innings a year and like a sub 3 ERA. He was insane. He was insanely good. So it's weird that he's going to potentially enter and or leave the ballot before Kershaw, Verlander, Scherzer, and all those pitchers, because they've lasted longer. They've had better careers than him. But he was of that same era, and there's a very good debate that he was, I can confidently say he was the second best pitcher during his peak to only Clayton Kershaw, and the numbers will back me up there. But you talk about aura. He had the King Felix nickname. He had the King's Court. He was an insanely fun pitcher to watch. He was not very stoic on the mound. He showed a lot of emotions. His pitching windup was fun. He had aura on the mound, is what my generation likes to say. So now let's just dig into the numbers. Again, I would vote for Felix for the Hall of Fame. I can't be objective about this. I can't sit here and object and say, like, I wouldn't vote for him, because I would vote for him no matter what. That is how much he means to me, and that's how good I think he was. And I'm a big Pete guy, and again, I'm a big Hall person. I think we should celebrate great, great, great players. And he was so good for a decade. He was insanely good. One of the best peaks we've seen in the modern era. And I'll get into it now. I pulled some fun little cherry pick stats to just kind of get this going. And then I'm going to compare like his 7 year peak to his contemporaries and his 10 year peak to his contemporaries, just because I pulled up both those numbers. But I stat headed some fun ones. Again, they're a little cherry picked. So there's that. In the integration era, which is 1947 to now, the pitchers with the most seasons throwing 230 innings or more with a 2.5 ERA or lower, Juan Marichal has 6 of these seasons. Tom Seaver has 5. Bob Gibson has 4. And then tied for third place with 6 other guys is Clayton Kershaw and Felix Hernandez. Felix Hernandez has 3 seasons like that, tied with Kershaw, Randy Johnson, Roger Clemens, Steve Carlton, and Sandy Koufax. All those guys, pretty good. I have 2 more little stat head stats for you. In the wild card era, pitchers, when is the wild card era? 1994 sounds correct. Wild card era. So This is another seasons counter. So how many seasons did these pitchers have with these stats? Minimum 200 innings pitched, a 3.5 ERA or lower, and 200 strikeouts or more in the season. Justin Verlander is first with 9 of such seasons. Randy Johnson is second with 8 of such seasons. And then tied for third is Max Scherzer and Felix Hernandez with 6 of such seasons. Now, let's just get into what his 7-year peak looked like. He came up when he was 19 in 2005. I've identified his 7-year peak was 2009 to 2015. There's 7 seasons in there of which he was an all-star every year except for 2010, the year he won the Cy Young. I remember because there was a debate whether him or CC Sabathia should be elected to this all-star team. And CC had a better win-loss record at the time, so they put him in. Because Felix, again, if a reminder, won the Cy Young that year. 2.27 ERA, 249 and two-thirds innings pitch, both led the league. Ridiculous. 7.2 baseball reference war as well. Just an insane season. Didn't make the all-star team. He went 13-12 that year, which is why. But it's a 7-year peak, 2009 to 2015. So this is all stats from then. And just to read off some of the numbers before I dig into how he compared to his peers at the time. He went 104-65 over that span, sure. 2.83 ERA in 1,596 innings. 136 ERA plus in that time. 37.9 baseball reference war. Again, 6 All-Stars, a Cy Young, 2 Cy Young runner-ups, and this is, I mean, it's pretty contentious. He definitely shouldn't have won in 2009. Granke's season was wild that year. But I think, I'm again, so biased. I think he should have another Cy Young in 2014. That was the Kluber year. I was close, and it was very close in the voting. I think Felix should have gotten another Cy Young. But those stats are crazy. So, over that 7-year peak, 2009 to 2015, how did he compare to the rest of the league? Well, his 1,596 innings was the most in Major League Baseball. And for just a second here, I want you to take a stab at who you think is second to him. It was James Shields, second, with 1,558, which is awesome. Felix, fourth in complete games, only behind Kershaw, Cliff Lee, and Roy Halladay. He was first in quality starts over that span with 171. Out of 230 games started, that's a 74 quality start percentage. Just to put it in a little bit of perspective, since 2018, so 7 seasons, and yes, 2020 is in there, but this is a percentage stat, not a counting stat, so I don't feel bad about having a smaller sample. Who do you think has been the best pitchers in the league over that time? And I'll answer your question. It's been Zach Wheeler and Gerrit Cole. Over, like, consistently over all 7 of the seasons, there's definitely been a lot of good pitchers in this time, but I think those are definitely top 2 that might come to mind. Their quality start percentages over that same period are 65%, which is really good. 74% for Felix is kind of crazy. If you look at Felix's pure war calculation over his 7-year peak, 39.8 Fangraphs war was second only to Clayton Kershaw. His baseball reference was 37.9, also second only to Clayton Kershaw. His 2.83 ERA was third among qualified starting pitchers, third to Kershaw and Wainwright. His ERA minus was 73. I was using Fangraphs for this one. Second only to Kershaw. His 1.11 whip was third over that time, only to Cliff Lee and Kershaw, and he was tied with Zach Greinke. And his 1,549 total strikeouts over that time was second only to Clayton Kershaw. His strikeout percentage was third at 24%. Third to Scherzer and Kershaw. This was not that long ago, like 2009 to 2015. That 24% K percentage was elite. Think about that. Think of like 24% is close-ish to league average right now. I think league average K percentage now is like 20, almost 23. I think it's just under 23%. And above, if you look at the average K percentage in 2010, it was 18%. So 24%, again, it was elite. What's also really fun is, and this was a trademark of his with his elite changeup, during this time period, he led the league in ground ball percentage among qualified starters, which is just a fun one. And then here's the kicker. His run support per nine innings over this span was last among qualified starters with 4.01 runs per nine innings that the Mariners gave him over his seven-year peak. Again, one of the best peaks we've seen from a pitcher in the history of the sport. Last in run support. Like, that is so predictable. Like, I found that it was obviously not shocking. It just confirmed, it's just confirmation bias, but it's hilarious that it actually is true. So, over his seven-year peak, did you hear how many times I said only second to Clayton Kershaw? Yeah. Real quick, his 10-year peak, just to widen the window a little bit, and I've identified his 10-year peak to be 2007 to 2016, ages 21 to 30. And still, he was very good compared to Major League Baseball at the time. His 2,140 and a third innings was third in Major League Baseball behind Verlander and James Shields. He was fifth in complete games behind Kershaw, Sabathia, Lee, and Halliday. He was first in quality starts, again. His 48 Fangraphs WAR was third to Verlander and Kershaw above him. His Baseball Reference WAR was 47.2, same, third to Verlander and Kershaw. His 3.06 ERA was second among qualified starters, second to only, you guessed it, Clayton Kershaw. ERA minus was 77. Can you guess who was first? Yep, Kershaw. His 2,011 strikeouts total over this 10-year span, second to only Justin Verlander. And then his strikeout percentage was eighth among qualified starters at 23% from 2007 to 2016. Greinke, Cole Hamels, Verlander, David Price, Tim Lincecum, and Max Scherzer, Clayton Kershaw were the ones above him. Probably the lowest ranking I'm going to tell you today. Besides run support, where he was last. But I will say, while his K percentage was eighth, I told you his total Ks were second to Verlander, and that's because he threw more innings than all of those guys I just said besides Verlander. He was still first in ground ball percentage over this 10-year peak, just like the 7-year peak, which isn't surprising. And then his run support per nine was actually not last, but second to last over these 10 years. And I feel like it's because this peak includes 2015 and 2016. Or I guess actually maybe 2016 put him over the hump here because that team was actually pretty decent at scoring runs. But second only Matt Cain, second to last to Matt Cain in run support. So if you're a peak person, instead of like if you put more Hall of Fame worth on a peak than like longevity, like Felix is your man. Like he was so good again from age 19 to 30, and then it fell off when he hit 31. He was hurt and just couldn't pitch well. And again, I think that just the fact that he didn't age gracefully at all is just a testament to how good and how many innings he threw at his peak. It's like almost a compliment that he couldn't pitch well into his 30s. He couldn't pitch into his 30s at all. That's almost a compliment to just how much of a workhorse he was. And again, we just don't see this in the game anymore. And obviously his Cy Young helps his Hall of Fame case, his All-Stars, his Cy Young finishes help. He always got MVP votes in those Cy Young like good years. The perfect game adds to his lore. I think that adds to his Hall of Fame case. Throwing a perfect game is insanely cool. And only, 24 guys have ever done it, 25 guys. I was at that game. Shout out to my brother Tyler for bringing me to that game. The thing that goes against him, I said, longevity. And I think just not pitching in the playoffs. I think the fact that he pitched on some of the worst baseball teams at the time in those Mariners teams really hurts his Hall of Fame chance, which sucks. Like, it shouldn't, and I hope voters will look past that, and I'm sure a lot of them will and have in the coming years. But I like the fact that he never had any playoff moments, and he pitched on the Mariners, who, even when the Mariners are good, they're more irrelevant than like a mediocre team on the East Coast, it seems like. That definitely is one of the detractors, which it shouldn't be, but it is. I'd vote for him. I mean, I just want to go through here and just read his innings pitched until he was 30. Indulge me for a second. So he comes up 2005. He's 19. And I'm just going to 19 to 30. Here is the innings numbers for Felix Hernandez per season. 84 and a third. 191. 190 and one third. 200 and two thirds. 238 and two thirds. 249 and two thirds. 233 and two thirds. 232. 204 and a third. 236. 201 and two thirds. And then 153 and a third in his age 30 season. That is just unheard of in today's game. Completely unheard of. Think about Logan Gilbert. Logan Gilbert has been about as durable as they come and has been really good for the Mariners since he came up in 2021. Logan Gilbert came up when he was 24. Felix came up when he was 19. Logan Gilbert has thrown 119 and a third, 185 and two thirds, 190 and two thirds, and then this past year, 208 and two thirds, which led the league. If he's on the Felix track, Felix threw from 200 and two thirds. He made the jump to 238 and two thirds in year five. Can Logan Gilbert do it? You know, honestly, maybe. But no, it was Felix's combination of elite stuff where he was one of the better strikeout pitchers of his era, but it was an era where, like, an elite strikeout, elite starter now is striking out 28% of the batters they face. Like, Max Scherzer's the exemplification of how far you can take strikeouts and durability as a pitcher. Felix had the strikeouts that were elite for the time, but then he also had those ground balls. He could always go deep into games because he would strike out a fair amount of batters, but he would just never give up hard contact. He was just such a good pitcher. You talk about like a pitcher versus a thrower. Man, he was just the art of pitching. It was just beautiful, beautiful to watch Felix Hernandez pitch. I have one more Stathead stat to throw at you before I'm out of here. In the integration era again, the most innings pitched before turning 26. And Felix Hernandez is 11th on this list. 11th. In the 2000s. So I'm just going to read you these names here. Burt Blyleven, Don Drysdale, Larry Dierker, Catfish Hunter, Fernando Valenzuela, Dwight Gooden, Denny McClain, Joe Coleman, Frank Tanana, and Milt Pappas. And then Felix is 11th. So that's, again, most innings pitched before turning 26. Felix threw 1,388 and a third. The closest pitcher on this list to Felix, like in time period-wise, was Dwight Gooden. And that was 1984 to 1990. Valenzuela was the second closest, 1980 to 1986. All the rest of those pitchers in the integration era were from the 60s and 70s, where pitchers commonly went a lot longer in games. So the fact that Felix did it in the 21st century is insane. The fact that he threw that many innings. Like, Felix is a Hall of Famer in my book. I really hope he makes it. This was a super encouraging first year. I really can't believe he got just over 20%. Like, I'm elated at that. And I really, really hope these next 9 years he gets into the Hall. Like, I might cry if he does. That would be just amazing. And I will rest my case there. Shout out to Ichiro. Shout out to Felix. And I'll leave you at that. Let's hope the Mariners blow me out of the water and sign Pete Alonso to play baseball for them. Let's just hope. Let's cross our fingers, huh? Thanks for listening. Again, this is episode 100. I can't believe I made 100 of these. I'm going to make 100 more. I'm going to promise you that right now. But thank you for listening to this week and any other of my podcast episodes that you've listened to. Thank you. Have a great rest of your week. And go Ichiro. Go Felix.